You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Over the last week, we, myself and Grace as well, was involved, talked to numerous people about the urban development in New Zealand and Auckland. I've talked to Housing Minister Phil Twyford, MP and Opposition Spokesperson for Housing and Urban Development, Judith Collins. Grace talked to Ricardo Menendez-March of Auckland Action Against Poverty. And I was lucky enough to be joined in studio, as I said before, by Jacqueline Paul, a landscape architect, graduate student and researcher and lecturer, and Olivia Haddon, about all things urban development. Integral to how we progress and develop our urban and rural environments correctly and sustainably is, from what I've gathered from these discussions, how we perceive land. Other factors that seemed important were representation of levels of financial security and ethnicity, different policies and colonization and economic strategy or systems that could also be inferred as capitalism and kind of the commodification of land. This is meant to be an analytical conversation. It's not a complete guide to Aotearoa's urban development, nor is it a list of solutions, nor is it meant to be a list of solutions. Within the last fortnight, there was an in-depth RNZ article titled White Noise on the engagement in the Auckland planning system, focusing on the engagement statistics of the Auckland 2050 plan. This piece was written and compiled by Kate Newton. If you haven't read it, I do strongly recommend reading it. It is quite an interesting read. It is prefaced by stating that Tamaki Makaurau is a relatively ethnically diverse city, that it has a median age of 34, and it sadly has rather high levels of income disparity. With this in mind, Newton found that 75% of the people who submitted to the plan were Pākehā or European, compared to Pākehā making up around 50% of Auckland's general population. 2/3 of them were from higher income areas, and 7 out of 10 of them were aged 30 or older. I would like to note that from what I have seen in these statistics are also similar to those looking at the creation of the Auckland Unitary Plan, which have been also known for some time. I asked Minister Twyford and MP Collins what they thought these perhaps disproportionate statistics were reflective of.
I think we've got to find ways to bring more people into the conversation about the future shape of our towns and cities. I think the Auckland Unitary Plan and the Independent Hearings Panel process was a good step forward. There was a lot of public engagement, a lot of public debate. And for the first time, the voices of young people, I think, were heard in a real way in that debate, and the need for investment in affordable housing, the need for more permissive planning rules that would allow our city to grow, for more height and density in certain neighbourhoods. So that was a big step forward, but I think we also have quite a long way to go. And I'm hopeful that with the establishment of the Urban Development Authority, with all the kind of tools and at its disposal to lead large-scale projects and consult with communities and local councils, that we can take this a step forward and really lift the bar and raise the kind of the quality of planning for our city.
Well, Oscar, I'm not a local government politician, so the Auckland Unitary Plan is not something I've had any input into. What I would say to you is this, is that if people want to submit, they can. I think that the fact is that more people submit, then you get better representation. If you are at all suggesting that Pākehā be limited in the number of submissions they can make, I would not agree with you. I think everybody should submit. And that is one of the roles that people like yourself and the media have, which is to encourage people to have their views known and to engage in a positive way.
Certainly, don't want limits on Pākehā people submitting. Rather, I would like to see the other groups actively encouraged as well. I understand that you're not a local government politician, and thus the Unitary Plan is not necessarily your area of expertise. Yeah. But as the spokesperson for urban development, I'd just like to get your opinion on this at least.
Well, I think it's just, I don't know why people would do that, but I would say that it is normal for people who have either more time or more resources or better access to advice to make more submissions if they can.
Yeah,
and many people who are, in my experience, many people who are busy with children or are racing from job to job or various other things are just trying to get through the day. So I would suggest that that is a lot to do with people who have either more access to resources, or the other way it can be looked at is people who are because, of course, resources are not necessarily ethnically based at all, although some, obviously, there is more of one in some particular ethnicities than others, but it's not necessarily that. Sometimes you just find that people see local government or government itself as something that they're not always feel relaxed dealing with, and feel sometimes thinking that they don't come from a country where people would actively and want to engage with a government body. And sometimes it's just that people think, oh, that's not for me. So I think anything that can be done to encourage people of all ethnicities, ages, and obviously gender, to partake in active participation in government decisions, whether it's local or central government or parliament, is a smart thing to do, because the more engaged our community is, the more we own our, we feel a sense of ownership.
I continued in each interview, or all of the interviews that I conducted, asking whether they, the interviewees, thought that these statistics were perhaps anything to do with Aotearoa's perhaps Anglo-centric planning model, which, although at the time felt the right question to ask, in hindsight I believe that this is rather myopic. The Anglo-centric model may not any longer be explicitly exclusionary to Māori and Pacifica, and to say that it is perhaps highly ignorant and places huge negative judgment on the capacities of Māori and Pacifica to engage in civil practice, although I do still hold the fact that our system is an Anglo-centric model quite key to the discussion around our planning model. This is furthered, I think, as well by, in every interview that I conducted, we discuss this kind of idea of bureaucracy in the planning system and how it may not actually be entirely discriminatory in its exclusion. However, it's shown up more because of who's involved in the system. Judith Collins does indeed state as well that this system is not exclusively barring to Māori and Pacifica. It is an inherently confusing technocratic juggernaut which is difficult to interact with.
And I also find the entire system at the moment completely fraught and difficult to deal with. So I would say to you, this is not just someone who isn't Pākehā or whose ancestors have not come from a particular part of the world. It is a very difficult process for anybody, more so for people who have not grown up in it or haven't had their families involved in it. It is a very difficult, time-consuming, costly, and I would say completely fraught business for anybody.
Saying that, although I think that there is this difference, however, we do need to look further into it as to why it does specifically show up as looking discriminatory or disproportionate. And I would suggest that perhaps this is enhanced by conflicting views of land in Aotearoa. From my perspective at least, for Pākehā or those of colonial origin, land was and largely still is something that is divided and distributed. Usually there is no connection between the owner and resident and the whenua or the land. British philosopher John Locke, from his theory of property, best encapsulates this, referring to empty land as idle land, and in some cases even as wastelands. Whenua, from a Pākehā's perspective, circa 1840, was seen as having no real intrinsic value. It was worth what it could produce, and it was not an entity. However, from an Indigenous view, from my learning and understanding, and from talking to people who are experts on this issue, this is not the case. Whenua, from my understanding again, is a life-giver. It is the placenta of Papatūānuku and is the holder of Ngā Rā o Mua, the days of past and the lives that came with those days. It is often classified as a taonga and as well as being tapu. When I was talking to Olivia Haddon, this was further continued and extended to not just being whenua, but also to include moana. Haddon did elaborate on perhaps this difference in land views.
I think for Pākehā, land is opportunity. And traditionally, for Māori, land is whenua. So whenua is nurturance, sustenance and livelihood and well-being.
Jacqueline Paul then suggested how we could perhaps mould a system around this view of land, or around different views of land, and how we could integrate this view into what she labels a Eurocentric planning system, or what some people would label an Anglo-centric, as in it has come from Britain, planning system.
I think there's multiple spaces and just based on the spaces that I work in, for example, within research. We're in an interesting time now where we are doing a lot more by Māori for Māori research. So under the National Science Challenge, Building Better Homes, Towns and Cities, we have got a large percentage of Māori academics working in that space. So we're working with communities, you know, changing the way that space works and operates to develop evidence. And that's what that evidence should be used for, is to inform, you know, policy makers and decision makers within that processes. So we have this space research, and then we've got governance and policy within that space. Then we've got practitioners. Practitioners need to use this information to understand what's going on, and then, you know, make evidence-based decisions on how to operate.
I also retrospectively have found myself making the mistake of asking, should we be and how should we be integrating Te Ao Māori into this Westminster or Anglocentric model? And I think it should now, when discussing treaty settlements as well, not be the place to say, here is our imposed Anglocentric system, how can we add you to the system? Perhaps instead it's more poignant and shows more of a commitment to ask, what do you see as the best or core tenets of the Westminster system that you would like to see working alongside Te Ao Māori values? The Te Aranga principles in Auckland's development plan are important to see in plans and important to see when we're shaping our city as a reflection of these values. However, perhaps why they are late addition rather than an initial inclusion. Jacqueline Paul then elaborated on this issue of inclusion perhaps as a token gesture and how we can work around this.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's why I moved into the education sector around lecturing, because we don't want, you know, to culturally misappropriate within that space, and we don't have the capacity within these spaces to be everywhere doing everything. So it's about educating those who are non-Māori why it's important, but from a position where it's not imposed on them, where it is a common level of understanding. And for me, I believe that is firstly understand your own worldview, why that's important, and then understanding Māori worldviews, because in general, you know, you find that common understanding of your own principles and what that's founded on.
Yes, so we've presented so far this idea of, you know, two conflicting, either, I don't like the term, but ethnic or cultural value systems around land, and how this may have caused issues and disengagement in the planning system so far. However, as I mentioned in the intro, perhaps there's other things that influence this as well. Olivia Haddon suggested to me in a quick chat prior to our interview that perhaps the conflict and the difference between the perception of land is also due to an economic difference in the individualist connotations of the Anglocentric system. The issue was not that the British established this system with British values in mind, rather that new economic models and priorities were unique to Pākehā citizen then at the time, and perhaps this commodification that came through the 1862 and 1865 land laws, Māori land laws, which privatized and individualized land from where they were in collective ownerships, had a huge effect. And it was indeed this new introduction of property, which isn't exclusive to British people, that perhaps slightly confused our planning system and where we went with it as New Zealanders. However, Olivia Haddon also continues this discussion, divulges that this may have been the case in the 1860s or the early stages of colonization and settlement. However, since then, it has been a long time and planning legislation has obviously progressed, which means and leaves us with what multiple people, including Haddon and even Judith Collins, have labelled a very unique New Zealand model.
I think what I picked up in our discussion was sort of calling it a Eurocentric approach. And I kind of thought that a Eurocentric approach places it in Europe. And but I understand the terminology you're trying to say is Western or non-Indigenous approach to land tenure and land use. So, you know, with Māori operated in the past prior to European settlement on their own understanding of rangatiratanga and their relationship to their well-being, to their whenua. And they had their own system in regards to planning for their community's well-being and the use of land around available resources for their benefit. So, I mean, fundamentally, we have in Aotearoa most definitely really established a way of planning that's based originally on the Westminster title system, and that's still in play, with a parallel land tenure of Māori. I guess that's through Te Ture Whenua now, an act over Māori land. And we've inherited that now, so we have a dual system on customary land and general freehold land. And because it's an absolute minority, under 4% or around 4% across the nation, majority of people in Aotearoa possibly don't exist, understand that Māori land is governed by a court system and a judge initially set up to obtain resource from Māori. But it still remains, and we still, despite the uprising in 1977 and the views of the people of the time that not one more land, acre of land to be lost, and that Māori still wanted to retain control of their whenua, we have come so far. And so our Land Planning Act, I think it was the Town and Planning Act in 1977, was the first time since 1840 that Māori value and their special relationship as tangata whenua to land was recognised, which then led us to the planning regime we have now under the Resource Management Act, which enabled, through legislation, the recognition of tangata whenua. So I think that was in the early 90s that came into place, when decisions were enabled, decision-making was to have regard for kaitiakitanga. And so we now have legal definitions of these values in our land planning statute. So I think we can't call this a Eurocentric approach anymore to land use and management. It's evolving into a very New Zealand approach.
We're back on the wire discussing housing and urban development and land and the views of land. So before the song, we had a clip from Olivia Haddon discussing the kind of New Zealand model that we've kind of evolved into over time, with this kind of combination of environmental prominence in the RMA, as well as the Anglocentric model that we started with right at the dawn of colonization of New Zealand, as well as the added in Te Ao Māori into the Anglocentric model that we do have. Judith Collins also agrees on this, which is an interesting one, that she also sees New Zealand's planning system and housing and urban development as quite a unique setting, which I also would tend to agree with. From here, we have a few kind of recommendations from both Jacqueline Paul and Olivia Haddon about how we can move forward and different ways that we can move forward and what we do need in terms of joining systems, if that is what is considered needed. Jacqueline Paul, I asked her about, because of it was brought up in her research, international models that we could perhaps learn from or build on. She talked about the systems in Canada with the First Nation people and Aboriginal people of Australia, as well as Pacific people and the planning that's done in the Pacific area. So here she is talking about that and the idea of solidarity. However, I think it's also important to note that solidarity, when talking about Indigenous integration into planning, shouldn't just be limited to international solidarity, but also a solidarity of peoples. We talked about how the data sets clump everyone into different like ethnic umbrellas. So there's Māori, Pacifican, Asian, and European. However, there's obviously differences between the people in those groups, and it is rather divisive perhaps if we do divide everyone up into ethnic groups. And so perhaps we should encourage solidarity in terms of the people of Auckland that are reflected in these statistics as well. However, here is Jacqueline Paul.
Well, we haven't really looked at, I guess, planning systems, not with the work that I've been doing, but understanding other precedents or case studies. And that's through strengthening networks that we have with, you know, First Nations and Aboriginals. And other Pacific people working in that space. So we've started to really connect the dots to understand what's working here, what's not working. So we haven't got all the answers. This is how we should do it. But everyone is trying to work within their own capacity to create change within the planning system.
Yeah, another thing that Jacqueline Paul noted in our interview as well is that these are quantitative statistics, these are numbers, and they don't really discuss qualitative issues or why people aren't engaging. It's just stating that they are not engaging, which is an interesting thing to cover in terms of perhaps we should also be looking into why rather than just how people are disengaged. But yeah, so then I continued this kind of topic with Olivia Haddon about what more we have to do into him, or what more should we do, and how we can combine systems as well.
There's still room for improvement, and we still haven't finished the process of settling treaty past grievances, and these are getting closer to being worked out. But there are many aspirations around constitutional change, and in terms of land tenure and Māori housing on traditional Māori land, there are still inequities in our statutes, especially our latent law, that need to be addressed. A lot of kind of constitutional change to essentially reflect the treaty partnership that the settler nation originally, which enabled New Zealand to form, to look at closely and to address. We have guidance with the United Nations Declaration around valuing Indigenous landholding and how we do that, and we have the treaty and the principles of the treaty. So how we need to start enacting what the treaty itself set out to do, which was a place where both Māori and non-Māori New Zealanders could thrive. And piece by piece, I think our nation will get there, and that depends on our leadership.
Yes, so that's the final clip we've got from the interviews. I would just like to highlight one last thing that was brought up by Jacqueline Paul off mic, however, was also brought up in every single other interview, and that was this idea of, as we were talking about before, classing or putting everyone into these groups and not really going into the differences between the peoples in the groups. It's like not all Māori people are the same, not all Pacifica people are the same, not all Pacifica people have the same values as each other, in the same way that not all Europeans or not all Pākehā people have the same values and opinions as each other. And Jacqueline Paul pointed out this kind of interesting thing that Pacifica, Māori and Asian people, who were the people highlighted in the original white noise piece and white noise statistics, they're not disengaged necessarily because they're Māori, Pacifica and Asian people. That it's not an inherent thing that because you are Māori, Pacifica or Asian that you are disengaged from any institution or any institutional system. It's the fact that these people don't have power in these systems, and the people that do hold the power in the systems are currently Pākehā people.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.